Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy.
Presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
There's an old saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Of course, that bit of horse sense is all too often lost on the policymakers at Northeast 23rd and Lincoln Boulevard in Oklahoma City. Latest example, yet another effort to undermine the state's excellent system of selecting appellate judges. You know, the justices for the state Supreme Court, as well as members of the Court of Criminal Appeals and Court of Civil Appeals. The current process, in place since 1967, involves a 15-member, independent, judicial nominating commission that selects what it considers the three best nominees for the opening. The governor then makes the final call. Known as the Modified Missouri Plan, this system was put in place after a series of scandals rocked the Oklahoma Supreme Court. It was designed to take politics out of the process, and it largely has. But that hasn't stopped right-wing groups in recent years from attempting to change the system because, frankly, they've lost their minds over Supreme Court decisions contrary to their views of reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights, public funding for religious schools, and more. Their plans, in full bloom in this spring's legislative session, involve dumping the Judicial Nominating Commission and making the selection process wholly political. The governor settles on an appointee, and maybe, or maybe not, depending on the proposed changes, the Senate gets to weigh in. It's Washington-style politics in Oklahoma City. Rework the system to ensure right-wing ideologues become the decision-makers on the state's highest court. To help us better understand what these proposed changes could mean for everyday Oklahomans, we invited eminent Oklahoma historian, author, and attorney Bob Burke, and former state representative David Perryman, an attorney who's seen firsthand this ongoing assault play out in the halls of power, to join us for this week's ObserverCast.
Now, I'm going to jump in really quick and just add, we recorded this last week, and today, April 16th, SJR 34 actually came up for a vote and was killed. But the guy who ran it, Representative LePac, is saying he's going to bring it up for reconsideration. So we're not out of the woods with this piece of legislation yet. We just wanted to give a quick update before we get into the meat of our interview with our guests, David Perryman and Bob Burke. So just a quick update and then on to the rest of the interview. Well, good morning to you both. It's so great to have you both here. We usually kick these off by saying, you know, tell us who you are and what you do.
Okay, I'm Bob Burke. I'm an attorney in Oklahoma City. I probably spend more than half my time writing books, recording stories about great Oklahomans. I've done that for a very long time. And occasionally when there is a screw up by the legislature, I try to, without charging clients any money, I sue the state. Of course, that can be quite often. So I challenge. I filed 122 challenges to state laws in the last 10 years. And I've won most of those because not a lot of folks know that we have a constitution.
Well, and because you're being so humble, you know, you are also responsible for some of the most definitive histories of our state. And so very esteemed guest to have here today. Just going to put that out there. So
thank you.
And then, of course, we have former Representative David Perryman, who's always a joy to have on here. So please tell us a little about what you're doing right now.
The eminent former state representative.
Yes, eminence.
We don't want you to feel left out there.
No. An honor.
Although, how many lawsuits have you filed against the state in the last 10 years? I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, you know, sometimes I do some amicus with them, but... I've practiced law in Chickasha. I'm trying to phase out of that and do a little bit more genealogy, but I keep getting drawn back in because of the issues that we're facing as a state. I spent 8 years in the state House of Representatives, representing about a three-county area in southwest Oklahoma, and decided that the 8 years I spent felt more like 38, and as far as physical age. And so in my spare time, I read Bob Burke's books and thoroughly enjoy those and appreciate what he's done for the state and for, you know, the integrity that he has with regard to bringing things to light that many of us don't really, you know, the characters that were in state government at about the time that I started practicing in the mid 80s. And so it's very interesting to be here, and I'm very honored to be here with him.
So the we haven't put out, I just want to put this out there. We haven't put out a podcast in a couple months because normally, you know, the session ramps up and there's always stuff to talk about. And we really hit a point where we were like, we've talked about all these things before. Because, I mean, they just weren't coming up with a lot of new things, right? Abortion, gun. I mean, it was just the same old stuff. And we could put out, we could just recirculate previous podcast episodes. I mean, I don't know if they're just running out of ideas or what. But what we wanted to talk about, this fell on our radar. And it was like, okay, we have to talk about this. It's been a long time coming. We knew it was going to happen. But the judicial nominating process in the state of Oklahoma, every time the Republicans lose something in the court, you know, you know it's going to come up because it's a unique process. The governor doesn't control it, which obviously puts him in fits. Anything that he doesn't control puts him in fits. And so with just kind of the reliability of the state Supreme Court being, and I'm a little on notice because I'm talking to two lawyers, and so I'm worried about my language right now. So you guys correct me if I get the language wrong. But the state Supreme Court is kind of always the voice of reason often when these frivolous things become law. And so this judicial nominating committee is very unique and it has a history and there's a reason behind it. Just like there's a reason why they're trying to undo it. And so that's why we're here today. I mean, because this could really be terrible. Of all the terrible things that they do at the Capitol, this could potentially be really, really bad. Because again, you know, there's a reason why we have it. Bob, would you kind of talk about that history, why this committee was created to begin with? Because that's really, really important. It wasn't an accident.
No, and it was a Republican idea. And the Republican leadership of these days forgets about that because, and this current attempt is nothing but a power grab, okay? And we have the court reform in the 1960s because we went through a dark day in Oklahoma history. We had such a scandal that Time Magazine's front cover one time said, in Oklahoma, justice is for sale. Because we had justices taking, and three of them got caught. There probably were more of them who took bribes, okay? Never been proven, though. But three of our justices in the 1960s were either convicted of taking bribes or impeached and thrown out of office. All three went to prison. And they were taking bribes to throw cases because we had this horrible partisan situation. Of where that we had all Democratic judges most of the time, because the state was Democratic at the time, and you had campaign contributions that were actually bribes, and everybody knew that. Now, the current attempts to do away with the Judicial Nominating Commission, the JNC, is the power grab. And it only affects the appointment of justices of the Oklahoma Supreme Court and then judges of the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals, which is our highest criminal law court, and the justices of the, or the judges of the Oklahoma Court of civil appeals, which is our intermediate under the Supreme Court, intermediate appellate court. Why is the JNC needed? The people of Oklahoma in 1967 believed it was needed to take partisan politics out of the selection of judges. Now, those who want to undo that and have nine conservative justices who would vote exactly how the leadership of the state wants to, that's what they want, okay? The idea, and the founders of this republic, both in Washington and with our Oklahoma Constitution, the founders had such a brilliant idea of separation of powers. And the Supreme Court has always served a vital function. So if the chief executive, the governor, and the legislature, if they do stupid things, if they do things that are contrary to the Constitution, and no matter how hard they try or how well-meaning they are, they always do that. They always have and they always will, okay? And so when they do that, it's the job of the Supreme Court to say, look, we have a founding document. The people of the state, when we became a state in 1907, we approved a constitution. Down through the years, we have amended it more than any other state in the union. But once we have a constitution, we need to stick by that, okay? And if the legislature passes something or the governor does something that is unconstitutional, then somebody needs to challenge them on that. So it's been a check of whoever's in power. See, it's a short-sighted situation for, I believe, the Republican leadership by saying, oh, hey, we want a Supreme Court to totally reflect our values. Well, what if we go back the other way at some point? Then they put into a position of where then a Democratic governor can just choose his brother-in-law, if he wants to, as a justice of the Supreme Court. Now, those people will say, oh, well, let's go to the federal system. Let's do that. Okay, the federal system has not worked well at all. Okay, you're talking about partisan politics, because, for example, we have a Democratic president right now, and so you have appointed positions like U.S. attorneys. Did you realize that in Oklahoma, we don't have any permanent U.S. attorneys because our two Republican senators will not move any nominations? So you have acting U.S. attorneys are the chief federal law enforcement officer for all three districts of Oklahoma. Yet you have good people, but you don't have any permanent person running those. Same thing with federal judges. Hundreds and hundreds of times, there have been quality people appointed judges of this country using this federal system. Yet whatever party is in power in the United States Senate, that's who controls who the judges are. So going to a system like that just puts far more politics in it than we do now.
I mean, just as an example, when Justice Scalia died and his replacement got hung up in a Republican Senate, you know, and so now we know what happened because of that, right? And yeah. I just think of, okay, right now the Senate has to confirm the governor's appointees to head agencies, certain agencies. You know, I mean, some of these yahoos, like, oh my God, the Department of Health, perfect example, right? How many times have we had to replace the Department of the lead of the Department of Health that is still confirmed by the Senate? And it's just like, it's just a pro forma kind of decision, right?
A total political, you know, because it's always, hey, I was Secretary of Commerce when I was 27 years old going to law school. And all I had to do to get confirmed by the Senate was to have my own state senator for me. And then as a matter, if your state senator is for you, it's literally those always get appointed, always get approved, just the way it is. So it would be adding politics to it. Now, there is an argument that those who want to do away with the JNC, they're just lying through their teeth when they say that lawyers control the current selection process. There are 15 members of the JNC at the present time. only six of those are lawyers. And those six are lawyers, and they're reputable folks. They're conservative. For example, the one newest member of the Judicial Nominating Commission is a well-respected defense attorney down at McAfee Taft, a major, hey, nobody's ever thought that McAfee Taft was a left-wing outfit in Oklahoma, but but to see what happens, the six lawyers on the JNC are elected by the lawyers in a specific district, okay? And then so all at once, lawyers certainly don't control it, because nine of the 15 members of the JNC by law have to be non-lawyers. Now,
and just for people who can't do math, yeah, six is not a majority. Six is not a majority of 15.
No. So you have nine non-lawyers. Not only can they not be lawyers, they can't even be married to a lawyer, because the statute has been changed down through the years on that. So it's just an absolute lie to say that lawyers control the process. What you do is that the governor appoints, by the way, six of the nine now, and then the speaker has one, the pro tem of the Senate has an appointment, and then when 14 members get together, they at large select another person. There's always been the Constitution amended in 1967 by a vote of the people. We wanted to make certain that the JNC would not in any way be controlled by one political party. So it can't all be a bunch of Democrats, and it can't be all a bunch of Republicans. It's a wonderful idea that has worked so well. And my daddy down at Broken Bow would say that the proof is in the pudding. I'm sure that's not original Broken Bow term. But in the 55 years since court reform, we have not had one scandal in the appellate courts of this state. It has worked well. And those, for example, I think the governor has got to be happy with the way that the JNC allowed him to pick our current, he has picked three justices of the Supreme Court, and all three are quality people, okay? I don't always agree with their decisions, okay? But that's okay. I just want them to follow the law, but I don't want anybody to have an agenda. Judicial independence is such an important thing for all citizens. And we wouldn't have that if the governor could just appoint anybody he wanted to. And then the Senate, now, by the way, the Rules Committee this week amended the Senate resolution that would send this to a vote of the people. Now the House wants to confirm. So yeah, you would have the House and the Senate to confirm them.
If the legislature's not in session, then there's a provision that the governor can call them into session. Now it would take both houses, the House and the Senate, to be called into session, so both of them could weigh in on confirming
governor. Imagine how well that would work, given Stitt's track record with special sessions. You know,
then the taxpayers would be on the hook for another $50,000 every time that came up. And let me tell you, those Court of Criminal Appeals and Court of Civil Appeals positions, because we have 17 judges in those two courts, and those turn over a lot. You have, for example, the governor's legal counsel, the present time, fine lawyer, but he simply resigned one of the Court of Civil Appeals judgeships that is for life, but with the every 6-year retention, but he got off that. So there's a great turnover in that. So doing it where just the governor can appoint anybody he wants to with no formal vetting is just crazy.
You know, Bob, I'm glad that you kind of went into the mechanics of what occurred prior to 1967 and also the mechanics of the JNC, because this was a well thought out, well studied process that was implemented in Oklahoma, pretty much on the cutting edge of this type of format to bring fairness and, you know, just openness, because when the governor in those states where the governor appoints without any sort of JNC or JNC-like input. That's all a confidential behind the scenes where the governor brings this name out of the hat and is, as you said, could be their brother-in-law, could be, you know, just whoever. But the process of the JNC is and has been since 1967. It's very open. You know, everybody knows who's applying. There are very, very detailed nonpartisan background checks on the applicants. And, you know, I got a call not too long ago about an applicant that that I had known for quite some time. And that was a thorough background check that they were making there. And then the top three under the JNC format are submitted to the governor. And the governor then selects. And what really happens in the end, I haven't seen a Democratic candidate or Democratic applicant selected by a Republican governor anyway. But at least we know that three-person list are going to be quality individuals who don't have issues in their background that would potentially not only threaten their independence as a jurist, but also that would not disclose something that has happened in their past. And so, you know, I think the people of Oklahoma need to understand that, the JNC is probably one of the most brilliant things that's ever come out of Oklahoma government.
A lot of states have adopted, you know, they've patterned after us. And, you know, I personally know of two situations of where somebody who was on the surface would have been very popular with a governor for a judgeship and most likely would have been appointed without vetting were shut down because of the OSBI, the Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation behind the scenes. And both of them would have resulted in an embarrassing situation for the governor appointing that person and for the person themselves. So it serves that. So you can't, you know, some people say, well, those interviews ought to be public. No, you can't do that. Right. You, the members of the JNC. And also, by the way, I had somebody the other day tell me that, well, even though it's 9 non-lawyers against 6 lawyers, the lawyers overpower them. I said, have you looked at the quality people who are non-lawyers on the JNC? You are insulting them if you think the 6 lawyers are overpowering them. Yeah. I know that the word crazy has been overused in life, but it's just a crazy idea to go back to the way that Democrats wanted to do it. You know, they fought court reform. The leadership at the time, J.D. McCarthy was Speaker of the House, a powerful Democratic leader. But he fought court reform so long. But the people of the state could not take the embarrassment anymore. They passed court reform. And I don't understand. For 20 years, I not only have fought this tooth and nail, I've written 3 books just on the subject, just to talk about the Supreme Court scandal of the 60s and how well the current system has worked and the pitfalls of just putting total politics and then the people of Oklahoma not having a stopgap, not having one branch of government that can put the stop to 2 others that have gone crazy.
I just want to say, like, fortunately, Stitt won't be governor forever, but unfortunately, he has a record. We know what his record is, right? So we know what his appointments look like, and we know how often they have absolutely no experience in a certain area, right? I mean, so it's just like, with a governor with the proclivities of our current governor to appoint people with absolutely no experience in a certain area to take charge of the area,
Are you saying Justice Gino DeMarco? Is that what you're
saying? I mean, why not, right? Like, it's just that's exactly who I'm thinking about, right? But just like the parade of people that have been in charge of the State Department of Health, the parade of people, you know, I mean, just been disastrous appointment after disastrous appointment. I mean, and without the sort of vetting that this process.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. And to take that a step further, it surprises me that, of course, when I was in the legislature, this popped up. And what was it, 2016, 2017, I think. And it would, and it began, you know, I thought this is going to get traction. And fortunately, it didn't get traction sufficiently to advance. But what surprises me now is our legislature at early on in Stitt's tenure, in Governor Stitt's tenure, tended to give him more and more power. And then it kind of slapped him in the face, and they thought, oh, we've overdone this. You know, Oklahoma historically is
the Board of Education right now.
Yeah, a weak governor type, you know, and we've eroded that, or the legislature has eroded the weak governor ship that we've got in Oklahoma, and made him much more strength. And for them to now come in and support a repeal of the JNC, which will absolutely give him more strength, is surprising to me. You know, I just didn't expect it. I did not anticipate that this was going to happen. Now, I think this, and to discuss a little bit of the background, an SJR, for people who are listening, is a Senate Joint Resolution, and these can come up under as HJRs or SJRs. And what that simply means, it's a bill that a resolution that comes from one house of government to the other, and it will ultimately end up in a ballot item that, you know, if it's passed and signed by the governor, then the people of the state of Oklahoma will vote on this issue. But that's the process. Hopefully this, you know, it won't get out of the house. And as Bob had mentioned, yes, on Tuesday, this came over from the Senate, passed, I think there were only about, 10 or 12, no votes out of the Senate, came over to the House and went to the Rules Committee, and that's where the major change that was made by the House Rules Committee on a committee substitute on April 9th was to add, for the confirmation, adding the House to be, you know, like me too. If the Senate is going to be confirming, we want to confirm too. So and so that's what is on the floor version that will potentially be heard. You know, I mean, it could be heard anytime.
Those committee substitutes.
Yeah, that's exactly what they did, and so that's where we're at now. Fortunately, they didn't adopt the Senate version, because if they'd adopted the Senate version verbatim, then it would have gone to the governor. So this will actually have to go back to the Senate, because the House has amended the version that came over from the Senate. So, you know,
so was it a poison pill, maybe, or
well, it could be. Now, here's a little bit of the logic when you look at the personalities, and probably about 75% of the legislators that are currently serving were serving when I was there, and the chairman of the
House Rules Committee, right?
Yes, yes.
So John Eccles is on that committee, correct?
The chairman of the committee is Representative Osborne, and he actually did not he voted against the committee substitute. So you know, where that's coming from, and you know, there's so many things that happen behind the scenes that what often happens in front of the camera is kind of hard to decipher until after the fact, but that's kind of where we're at right now. But I've been in contact with my legislator. I've been in contact with a couple of other legislators. And, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, we need to study that. And I say, yeah, you do. And here's something you need to study about it. And one of the things that Bob had mentioned was what I had mentioned to them, that, you know, in 1967, this was driven by Republicans and just fought tooth and nail by Democratic leadership. In fact, Senator Gene Stipe, you know, you mentioned that, and Republicans all over the state, you know, the hair on the back of their neck stands up. But Senator Gene Stipe said, well, we can't do that. If we have a committee that's putting one name on the ballot, you know, this type of thing, he said it'll be like a Nazi. Bob probably remembers that better than I do.
And J.D. McCarty, those guys were so against that. And I don't understand the young crop of Republican legislators who want to go back to that.
Yeah.
Who want to go back.
They have no idea. That's the thing. They really have no idea.
They don't.
I feel like at this point, there's really an investment in keeping that ignorance, right? I mean,
But my wife, the other night, my wife said, hey, I've heard you talk about this issue a lot. How in just a couple of
just
sentences,
wrote a couple books, but
but how would you, in a couple of sentences, boil what they're trying to do? How would you boil that down? And I said, if we do away with the Judicial Nominating Commission in Oklahoma, we have done away with a balance of power in the state. We have done away with separation of government that has worked so well. We've done away with all that because there will be no checks and balances on whatever party is in power. Whatever they want to do to us people, there won't be a court to strike it down, no matter how unconstitutional it is. That is why this is such a serious, serious battle. And the House and the Senate just need to say, let's don't do this, because it's being supported by interests that are not happy with current court decisions. Although they can't look you in the eye and say, those court decisions didn't follow the law, David, you know that.
They just didn't like it.
They're saying the court doesn't reflect the wishes of the people. A court should never do that. Thomas Jefferson said the independent judiciary, having judges that will give all parties an equal, unbiased look at the facts in a case. Independent judiciary is the foundation of our republic. It's one of our most precious rights, and they are simply trying to do away with it.
And that's a perfect segue into, you know, I wanted us to be sure to talk about who these special interests are,
right,
that are involved in this.
And what are some of the decisions that they're unhappy with?
Well, they've always been unhappy with decisions on abortion. Okay, even back when Roe v. Wade was the law of the land, and our Supreme Court had no option but to enforce that law of the land, they would get unhappy. Remember, there was a legislator one time, David, you'll remember, you may have served with him, who was so unhappy about that, who said if he wasn't a Christian, he would go over Supreme Court and set himself on fire, pour gasoline.
Let's identify him.
Yes, that guy.
I did serve with him.
Served with him, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he was right across the aisle, and I thought, okay, well, get out of the building at least.
I'd be like, do it.
No, he was going to go over and set himself on fire on the Supreme Court steps. He was not going to do it in the chamber. Yeah.
I'm just going to be like, do it. Just do it.
A lawyer the next day said, okay, I'll bring the matches.
Am I incorrect? He also ran for DA in Oklahoma County.
He did.
So, I mean, it's kind of like this.
That's a matter of public record. Yeah.
Some of the other issues.
It's silly.
some of the other issues are things like, you know, as far as school choice, public funds for, you know, private schools, religious schools, you know, those types of things. Those groups that support funding private and parochial schools with public funds aren't happy with how they know the Supreme Court has ruled in the past, and also you know how they should rule if they're ruling based upon the Constitution of Oklahoma, the Constitution of the United States, you know, the separation of church and state, and all those issues, and they're not happy. So what they're doing is laying the groundwork so that in the future they will have the ability to know how a justice will rule, because they know how that justice got appointed and got confirmed. And you know, it's a philosophical. They want people who share their philosophies.
Yeah, there will be a lit test for a governor on major issues, and nobody will be appointed unless that person looks the governor in the eye and say, "Yes, sir, I'll vote that way." Do the people of Oklahoma really want that? No. No matter what your party affiliation is, do you want that lack of absolute checks and balances? No, you don't. Because that just, you know, you just as well, you know, have a dictator if you're going to have one person just simply decide everything.
And so then what we're also saying there is that justices that could be appointed under this system would be in a position to say that there are no basic civil rights or liberties for people in the LGBTQ plus community, for example. Those are others who are not deserving of equal status with the rest of society.
They could say that in a New York minute.
I was going to say a heartbeat, but yeah, about the
okay. About the,
yeah, and absolutely, and it's you know, it's frustrating. go ahead.
Oh no, I just said a New York minute is equivalent to a heartbeat.
but that's exactly where this is headed. It's you know, individuals that aren't necessarily opposed to the character of our current Supreme Court, current justices, but also they want people who can control, who ideologically believe 100%, like the litmus test that Bob had mentioned. One of the other things that this SJR does, it totally repeals Section 3 of totally repeals the JNC. And we've talked about appellate judges, but the JNC serves a purpose with regard to district judges also, that are appointed to fill vacancies. And it to eliminate that, even, I mean, a lot of times, you know, we are affected by what the Oklahoma Supreme Court says, you know, the Oklahoma Court of Criminal Appeals, the Oklahoma Court of Civil Appeals, but people are affected more in every single case, whether it's appealed or not, by district court judges. And the JNC also, in the appointment of a district court judge, selects the top three. And those individuals are then submitted to the governor, and that will be eliminated. My reading
what they intend there, because if there's no JNC, then the governor can, by other provisions of the Constitution and by statute, the governor can just appoint. If the district judge retires or in the middle of a term, the governor can just appoint anybody he wants to as the district judge. And you talking about affecting basic rights.
Yes. You know? And, yeah. basic right and just, you know, they're generally when a person rises to the level of an appellate judge in Oklahoma, they're vetted. Of course, you know, the JNC protects that, but there are so many attorneys in the state of Oklahoma who aspire to be a district judge who quite frankly don't have the character that it takes to be a district judge. And that's all out the window when you eliminate the JNC. Yeah.
So in this case, is the federal system an example of this as well? I'm thinking specifically of Judge Cannon in the Florida case against former President Trump, right? Like, she was appointed to the bench by President Trump. She has absolutely no got shit. Excuse my language, Bob. You don't know me, so I cuss a little bit. But, you know, Amy Coney Barrett as well, right? Like, people with minimal experiences on the bench and suddenly put into these positions because they fit a certain ideological profile, shall we call it?
Absolutely. And there are statutory requirements that, you know, for instance, I believe to be a district judge, you have to be in practice 3 years. 3 years.
That's 3 years, though. Like, you don't even let a doctor practice.
Oh, it may be 3 years. Oh, yeah. It may be five, but I think it's three. I think it's three. You know, and it's but you know, that's a position that pays well.
Any professional worth their salt will tell you they don't know anything after 3 years.
After 3 years, right. You know, right. Yeah, it's you know, sometimes after 40, I think.
Well, I know. I think the smarter you are, the more you the more you realize you don't know anything. Yeah. The longer you do something, so
this is more this isn't just appellate judges. I mean, that's the thing because ideologically, we see issues that will be before the Oklahoma Supreme Court, and that concerns me that those individuals will not be vetted. And it's, once again, it's this process of vetting is, I think, it's just a brilliant exercise that was done back in the mid-60s and has lasted and served us very well. But it's much broader than that. It's going to affect anyone in any corner of the state.
It is, David. It is much broader. It's scary because I said to one of my Republican friends, okay, if y'all elect Ryan Walters governor, you want Ryan Walters selecting every judge in this state from Ida Bell to Guymon to the members of the Supreme Court? You want somebody like that appointing? Come on, without any vetting? Come on.
Yeah, you know what their first question that they're going to do when there's a vacancy, and the first question that Ryan Walters is going to ask them, or the first conversation that they, as an applicant, have with the governor's governor or the governor's staff, are going to be those issues that are closest to you know, the governor Walters' position. And you know, I'm just like, if you have Governor Stitt unfettered in that, you know, the first questions are going to have something to do about, you know, what's your feelings about the tribes. You know,
they won't even get to that point without the governor's office checking to see how much they contributed to their campaigns.
And I can tell you with 100% certainty, because we've seen it and I've seen it personally, the minute someone, one of his appointees steps out of line, guess who gets removed from their position?
Yeah.
If they do not follow the governor's bottom party line.
I'm not announcing my candidacy. I once suggested that I was going to run for governor, and my wife said I would be running as a single man. So, but what if I became governor and I really wanted to make cockfighting the state, you know, I want to make roosters the state bird, and then I wanted to make cockfighting an Olympic sport and the sport of Oklahoma, okay? And so then what do I do? Do I appoint all the judges who will live up to that stupid idea? Mm-hmm. We don't want that. No matter how stupid an idea is, we must have checks and balances.
I mean, it is well in the nation. I mean, say for some reason we got like, you know, we somehow got like a Brad Henry with a Republican majority in the legislature, right? Like, if you can just think of how, I mean, just the impasses that would be created between, you know, the legislature not confirming his appointees, right? Just out of
guy that is in Washington. So mm-hmm. what if we all at once had two or three vacancies on our Supreme Court? And if you went for 3 or 4 years with vacancies on, because by the way, Governor Stitt in 5.5 years has appointed 12 appellate justices, judges or justices, okay? Nine on COCA or the Court of Criminal Appeals, and then 3 Supreme Court justices. Well, if during that period of time, if you had Brad Henry as governor with a Republican supermajority, then we couldn't function in the appellate court system at all because we wouldn't have any judges.
You don't have to look far to see the example of that happening. I mean, otherwise we would have Merrick Garland on the United States Supreme Court.
Correct. You know,
those confirming bodies, and now we've got two confirming bodies based upon the language of last week.
You can't even play nice with the state budget, for God's sake, right? Like, yeah. But then also you think, okay, so we have a slate of judges that have to be appointed, 20, however many. I'm sorry, but I really don't trust the governor's office to get that work done, right? Like, to find the candidates, vet the candidates, appoint them, and go through that process. Like, I'm sorry, I just don't think that they have the work ethic to actually put that in. And so just the sheer impasse, you know, the utter stoppage of work, you know, just no one gets along that well here in this state.
that was the conversation that I had with my former Republican colleagues in the legislature. Is, look, you know, here's what you're afraid of. Flip that. You know, look what you're opening the door to mm-hmm. allow. And this will not, hopefully, will not always be a Republican state. You know, this could flip. You know, and I think that about every large issue that, you know, it distresses me that, you know, the legislature does what it does on an issue. But, you know, and I think, okay, teachers will come back and vote Democratic and, you know, because they now see what has been done with Walters and in the State Department of Education. And so, you know, those things, I think this will flip back. You want this to occur so that you can control this. Look what's going to happen when this state flips back. You will have opened the door to just what wasn't wanted and or what was devastatingly happening in the mid 1960s, mm-hmm. early 1960s, and you're placing it front and center so that when you lose control, this is what you've opened the door for.
But none of this is ancient history. And even to the point of, you know, Democrats, because of hubris back in the day and controlling things for most of a century, you know, did the same kinds of things or resisted changes when people said, you're not maybe always going to have the power. You see, there's shifting sands here. You should do some of these things to, you know, to make sure that we have guardrails on this system. And it's like, oh, no, the systems work fine. We're going to keep going the way we're going. And now, you know, Democrats are going, gee, wish we had done a few of those things, like done away with state, you know, with straight ticket voting, or, you know, maybe, you know, some of those other things, right?
Absolutely. That's a perfect example of just riding that horse too long, or, you got to know when to pull the trigger to change it. If you're, you know, and Oklahoma went through a period of time. It didn't happen overnight. You know, the one house went Republican. You know, there were things that Democrats should have done when they were in the majority to have made this a much better state for the citizens of the state of Oklahoma.
They took everything for granted.
Yeah. Oh, I think, yeah, absolutely. They could not see, just like maybe some of these Republicans are looking at now, they can't see that 1 year or 2 years or 5 years from now, this is going to be a much different state than it is as far as ideologically. And they have an inability to see that far in the future. But it's kind of comical. And I think Bob touched briefly on this a little bit earlier about how the Democratic leadership just, you know, fiercely opposed JNC and the things that it brought, that removed the patronage and the ideological appointments and so forth. But when it got time, when they saw the writing on the wall that this was the popular thing to do, and we had the scandals, when it was finally voted on, those individuals, as far as Gene Stipe, I believe, supported the JNC. Because it was a situation that he knew. I mean, Gene Stipe was a smart guy, and he knew, you know, that. But he was also a smart politician, and he knew that when it was time to vote, he had to vote that way. But even though he had fiercely opposed it during the conception.
Yep.
All right. So what are we looking at then? The SJR has to head back to the Senate.
Well, it has to pass the House on the floor.
It has to pass the House. Okay,
I don't know what the timetable on that is for sure. But since it was changed, it will have to go back to the Senate. Maybe I guess it could be a joint committee type thing at some point in time. If normally it would go back just for passage, and then if it's still, if they still can't reach some sort of resolution.
So if they get signed, here's a gap in my knowledge. Does it automatically go to the general ballot in November, or does it get placed on a different ballot?
Well, I'm not even sure it would wait until November, because I think the effective date, I saw a date of November, says after November 5th, 2024, that's when it's intended to be effective under the language currently.
So it might be on the primaries in
June. Yeah, I guess it could be on the primaries. I'm sure that.
Yeah, I tell you what, though, there are the special interests who want that, would want more time, like the general election. They would want more time so that they could spend huge amounts of money to get it passed. And frankly, I think that they would want a Republican presidential candidate to have such a huge majority of votes in Oklahoma that they would count on a lot of those people to let's kill the lawyers, because the lawyers are controlling. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if they waited till November to put it on the ballot, that'd also be plenty of time for the opposition to pummel this. I think some of the some of Chris Steele's last stuff, right? Like how the Kirkpatrick Foundation kind of came out of the woodwork, and you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, yeah, it'll just be really interesting if this does make it past the governor's office, if it does get signed, if it makes past the House, all that stuff, which ballot it ends up on, because I mean, there's barely anybody that's going to be on a primary ballot in June,
And the governor has a big say so in that.
The
governor election, special elections.
Yeah.
I don't know. I suspect that if it ends up on a ballot, that it ends up on the general election ballot.
Yep.
All is not lost right now. I mean, I know this is very, I mean, this is, this, this is
It doesn't. It may not even be heard
right,
in the House.
Right up there with you know, with the attacks on an initiative and referendum. I mean, you know, it's taking the ballot, taking the people's voice away. This is up there in that area, but this is not a totally party line issue. I mean, there when you look at the votes out, and there are Republicans who you know, who practicing attorneys, people that I have a lot of respect for, that voted against this in the Senate, and it will that will happen in the House also. And so it's not like that anyone can just point their finger and say, well, this is, you know, this is to overcome those lousy Democrats. You know, I mean, this is I think that there's going to be the opposition to this that is going to pull together.
Well, I hope to be part of that.
And the bar,
but it is fair to say, right, that this is the most serious attempt we've seen to date to
let me tell you why it's the most serious attempt is because I believe that a majority of the leadership in the House are pro-JNC. And I should say members of the House. I think that if the leadership said, we don't care how you vote on this, I think the majority of the members of the House of Representatives would say, leave it like it is, okay? However, it's an election year. And I fear that issues that the Senate and the House differ on, that in the back room, they say, we'll give you this if you'll give us that. And I just think that SJR 34, putting it to the vote of the people to do away with the JNC is one of those issues that will be on the trading block. No matter how a majority of the members of the House of Representatives believe
that, and I as an individual who served there, that's how things work, and that is frightening and realistic.
Yeah, I will say, in the latest issue of the Observer, one of the things we tried to point out, a warning sign was JNC's in the horse trading, initiative petitions in the horse trading, more income tax cuts are in the horse trading. I mean, it's going on there, and you've got a speaker who thinks he's going to be governor, and you know, and so you've got this calculate. It's 2 years down the road, but
hey,
all these calculates, not just this election year. It's
no, that's true. Yeah, looking ahead, and I just think that's a serious problem for me. In fighting it right now, is in talking to individual legislators. I've had them tell me, "Hey, Burke, we are against this deal totally, but if leadership says go with it, I got to go do that." So, why? I always ask the question.
So okay. I'm gonna get a little nerdy right now about this. Okay. Looking at SJR 34. I mean. Okay, for lack of a better term, talk about a basket of deplorables, okay? I'm just looking at the list of authors, and it just makes my stomach hurt, right? So Senator Daniels, Bullard, Prieto, Jett, Burns, Hamilton. I'm not kidding when I say, and then Kevin West as one of the House co-authors. And I mean, the same guy who snuck in the chaplains in schools committee sub, shucked a bill. And I'm like, who are these guys? So my question is ultimately, if these are the people running the bill, what are its chances of actually either making it to the House or coming up for a vote and then passing? Like,
I appreciate you raising that issue, because one of the things that this struck me, and maybe Bob could comment on this too, but this didn't go to the Judiciary Committee,
right,
in either House, okay?
Right. It went through rules.
Because the Judiciary Committee has, that's where I've killed it in the past.
Yeah. And that's my point.
These are not your starters. The authors of this bill, Representative LePac, I mean, these are all very hard right individuals. So it gives away, you know, what this is about. Not a single one of these people are even close to being moderate.
And the judiciary, just because it didn't go through the Judiciary Committee members are still members of the Senate and members that there's a, you know, the House Judiciary, still members of the House. And so that leads, you know, gives me a little bit of hope. However, as I said earlier, it's not unusual for this to be filed. I think that this, you know, HJR.
Yeah, you see the resolutions all the time, right?
But for it to come off the floor of the Senate with the margin of passage that it had.
Right.
That's where it just, you know.
I completely agree. I mean, it has gotten way far, but I'm just like, this is a bunch of people in an election year that if they let this group of individuals pass this piece of legislation.
Yeah. Well, here's what scares me. Normally, that would have a lot of credence. The horse trading. The last 3 or 4 or 5 days of the session, this gets traded.
Oh, yeah.
That will be a terrible blow against an independent judiciary in Oklahoma. Because of the federal interests who are going to spend a huge amount of money to try to get this passed, so that they will have Supreme Court justices who will vote down their ideological line.
You know that rotunda is extra greasy right now.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Woof. This one's a doozy, y'all.
Well, we appreciate you, I appreciate you bringing this to the forefront and discussing, because it is it's at a critical point right now, and I think that attorneys across the state have been, Miles Pringle, the president of the Bar Association, has issued an editorial that has been in several papers. I know that it was in the Lott Constitution not long ago. And of course, you know, the communication there needs to be that here are the facts. Now keep your eye on it, because it's evolving, you know, with the House doesn't like the Senate. And I didn't think, well, the Senate's, you know, they're not going to allow the Senate to do that. And whether they do, they said, yeah, Senate, we'll let you do that, but we're going to do it too, as far as the confirmation process. So we just need to make sure we watch it. We need to make sure that we're in contact with our legislators. Everyone in the state needs to be in contact with their legislator as far as this.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
There you go. Yeah.
Man. All right, you guys. Well, this was just a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for your time. You're both treasures. It's great to talk to you both. Thank you for your wisdom and your knowledge.
Well, I'm very honored to be with y'all today.
Yes, we are. Thank you.
And as long as I'm breathing, I'll be pro JNC.
Yes. Okay. Awesome. All right. Have a great day, and let's do this again.
Okay. Thank you. It's good. Bye. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.